This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ben, and I'm sitting here with my stunningly gorgeous wife, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
And we have a patron pick for you today. Our patron, Kark, has picked a movie for us to watch. We'll get into that in just a minute. But before we do, we want to let you know that, yeah, because we have a patron, that means we have a Patreon. And for the low, low price of only 13 cents a day, you too can be a patron and gain access to early episodes.
Complete domination.
You get the uncut director's cut episodes, which means all like the real bickering and the real...
The accidental farts and...
the smutty talk that sometimes comes with the show. Because we do indulge in the alcoholic beverages while we're doing the show, but sometimes. All that can be yours. See, Kirk would hear that, but y'all won't. We have a TeePublic account, but you can find us on XHR_podcast on Instagram. We are a part of the Deluxe Edition Network group of podcasts. All that is good. Before we get into the movie again, we're going to do our Would You Rather. I have a Would You Rather, and this one I think is tricky, a little bit tricky. Another thing, when we do the Would You Rather for our listeners, hit us up and let you know what you would pick. Let us know what you would pick, because I know some of you guys out there will message us on Instagram and, you know, like, oh man, that was a tough Would You Rather or whatever. But,
and a good Would You Rather, not any of this mayonnaise or Miracle Whip crap.
Oh, wait, before we get into the Would You Rather, I also have to, okay, so in our last episode, we did the Game Time, and that was where I had the movie clips for Nancy to guess the name of the movie, just based on a sound clip from the movie. We had a little bit of a debate back and forth, what was technically included in a franchise of a film versus just a series of the film. Nancy was correct. So she does get one extra point for, I think it was Cabin Fever, maybe. She still gets her five picks. But, a franchise is everything that is encompassed in the group of movies. So
the main movie.
Friday the 13th, 1 through 10, plus the remake in 2009 would be considered a franchise.
Remakes, sequels, all of that is part of the franchise.
Correct. So anyway, yes, Nancy was correct. I was incorrect. So, yeah, she does get that extra point. She still gets her five picks. Now we'll do the Would You Rather. Okay. Would you rather have... if I can get through this. Would you rather have a body that was fully paralyzed with the exception of your sexy parts that completely functioned normal? Or would you rather have a completely normal body with paralyzed sexy parts?
See, I would say a normal body, because it's not the sexy parts that actually do. How would you explain a wet dream?
Well, that's mind.
Right.
That's in your mind.
Right.
Right. Your mind still works.
Right.
I mean, if your body was paralyzed, your mind would still work.
Yeah.
But you can't feel anything basically below your neck or, yeah.
Okay, so you'd be like a quadriplegic?
Basically, yes, that's what I'm saying. So you're, okay, yes, you're quadriplegic, but your genitals still work, or your genitals still, your genitals don't work, but you have normal functioning limbs and mind and everything else.
I would still have to go with regular, normal functioning mind, just because I can be very creative.
Okay.
But yeah, I wouldn't want to go through life with all that difficulty, everything that goes along with that.
Okay. All right. So I really don't know what I would pick, honestly. I would think, I think for your sake, I would have to pick normal. a normal sexy parts on a paralyzed body.
But then I got to take care of you.
you don't want to take care of me?
I mean, it's good, but...
Yeah. What? Oh, you mean the sex is good?
I don't know if it's like caretaker.
Okay.
That's a conversation, you know, outside of the show.
All right. So we know when I get old, know where Nancy's going. All right. That's fine. See, I have the advantage that my body will probably go before my mind, but Nancy's mind will probably go before her body.
This is true.
In real life. So I know what I'm doing now. Yeah. So, okay. All right. So, okay. The movie that we got for you today, Kark is our patron. He has picked The House That Jack Built. And actually, him and his co-host Brooke on a podcast on Elm Street just covered this movie. And him and I were kind of briefly talking about, you know, what our thoughts were on this. Now, I had covered this movie way, way, way back. Nancy was in school. She was like full-time work, full-time school. Basically, I pretty much just lived by myself because she was so busy doing work and school. And yeah, so
putting my nose to the grindstone.
Nose to the grindstone, busting her ass, getting her degree. Actually, at that time, I think she was working on probably... It would have been your master's at that time, I think.
I don't know.
And then she went on to get her doctorate. But anyway, so I had a gentleman on. I asked on Instagram, you know, what is a like the goriest, nastiest movie you can think of? The only caveat is if you answer, you have to come on the show and do it. So a gentleman picked the movie, The House That Jack Built. Long story short, he came on. We covered it. Nancy was not here. Now, when we do this episode on A House That Jack Built, it will be a funny show because Nancy's here. So yeah, Kark picked A House That Jack Built from 2018, does score a 6.8 on IMDb and a 3.6 on Letterboxd.
Wait, what was the IMDb?
6.8.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it would have been bigger or higher.
For a horror movie, that's actually pretty good on IMDb.
It had so many like elements in it though that go beyond it just being a horror movie.
It was very twisty, not twisty, but well, like you said, the elements, it goes deep into,
yeah, it gets
like
very
historical writing.
Complicated, and, yeah.
And I do have a little bit of that written down for later, but we are going to dig in now. So did I ever give my answer? Oh, yeah, I did give my answer for the Would You Rather. But, okay, so the movie stars mainly Matt Dillon as Jack. And this is one of the, well, like you said, the elements are going to make it really, really twisty.
Yeah, and, it's like a roller coaster.
It was.
Because you go from sympathizing to him, like, yeah, you know, I can relate, to like, man, what is wrong with him?
And then one thing we did debate was the time frame of the movie, strictly based on the cars and stuff. Like, we did find out that it was in 1980, because at one point in the movie he mentions that Mount St. Helens blew up and he could watch it from his property. So it takes place where near Mount St. Helens in 1980.
I don't think it's a Helens. I think it's Mount St. Helens.
Is it?
I think it is.
I think it's Helens. We're going to have to look. We're going to have to look. We could ask Nash. Nash would probably know right away.
No, I'd like you to find out yourself that you're wrong.
Is it Mount St. Helens? No. Oh, she's not going to read it? Mount St. Helens.
Oh. Go figure.
Yeah. Okay.
Aren't you Mr. Smarty Pants?
Oh, boy. I won one. Okay.
Oh, you'll be using this against me for a while.
At least you didn't say especially again. All right. So the movie follows Matt Dillon as Jack. Immediately you're launched into this, what do you call it? A title card? It says incident one or first incident. Matt Dillon, Jack, is driving down the road. He's got this sweet, like probably late 70s van.
Yeah.
You know, I do like his van.
Yeah.
Like very retro.
Yeah. I
mean, obviously.
Well, yeah, it was freaky looking. It was, did they have panel vans back then? Or were all vans? Because wasn't the van on Texas Chainsaw like that too?
Well, that one had windows, but theirs had a sliding door. I don't think his had a sliding door.
Volkswagen buses had windows.
Yeah. I think in Texas Chainsaw, it was a Volkswagen. I don't know what, Chevy or something in this movie.
Yeah.
But so anyway, Jack is driving down the road, country road, pine trees all up on the side. And he comes upon a woman who happens to be Uma Thurman. She has a flat tire on the side of the road.
I do want to mention this. She hasn't, as far as when this movie was made and what she did after that, I have no idea. But as far as when this movie was made, it doesn't look like she has had any kind of like plastic surgery or fillers or Botox. And I do have to give her props for that.
I thought, didn't she fuck up her face, though? How long ago was that?
It may have been, must have been after this, because she looked like a normal person in the movie.
She's definitely got the wide eyes.
Well, yeah, she can't avoid that.
Yeah. So Uma Thurman's character is parked on the side of the road. She has a flat tire. Jack pulls up alongside of her, and immediately she is, like, pushing him to first help her try and change the flat tire. Jack says, I don't have time. I've got an appointment.
She's a shitster.
So she, Jack says, hey, I got someplace to be. And she's like, come on, just take me to help me out. Drive me to the next town, something.
You're watching this. As you're watching it, you're like, oh, yeah. I want to punch her.
Well, she gets hers. Spoiler alert. So he ends up driving her to a blacksmith.
This is kind of the genius of the movie though. And this is why I would have thought that it would have been a better IMDb score, just because the movie starts out with you like sympathizing with him.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
And you think that's what the movie's going to be about. And you're going to keep,
I think if you don't know the plot, like you mean like he's just a guy that's pushed too far kind of thing?
Yeah, or? Yeah, that's what okay. It starts out like. So you're like, man, if I had this bitch talking to me like that, I wouldn't have even gone another mile on the road with her.
Yeah. So Jack picks her up. They're driving to this blacksmith's house shop for the blacksmith to repair her jack because it was missing the little loop for it to jack up. And this whole time, she is talking to Jack about how, oh, well, you know, I shouldn't have gotten into the car with you because you could be a serial killer. and you know, like, Jack is just kind of, he's playing it off at first, you know.
What's funny is, looking back after you've watched the movie, mm-hmm. It's like she's talking to, it could be like Jason or Michael Myers or Hannibal Lecter. But because they don't have, you don't know that. You think that it's just a regular person talking to another regular person.
Right.
But let's say, in retrospect, now that we've seen it, let's say Hannibal Lecter was the one driving.
Right.
Would she be so obnoxiously annoying?
If she knew that it was Hannibal Lecter, or if she just thought that he was just another guy picking her up?
I don't think it really matters. I mean, you don't know at the beginning that what he's going to turn into.
Well, right. No, you don't. So.
But he does get progressively like more and more agitated.
He gets really frustrated with her. He's like, so yeah, she gets her jack fixed. They're driving back. And then she starts talking about how like, oh, well, you know, see now you've gone and screwed up because so-and-so at the blacksmith knows that we were together. So if you were to kill me,
you skipped over the, you did something wrong. That's very wrong. You picked up a stranger. You could be a serial killer. Did you say it?
Yeah, a little bit ago.
Oh, all right. Sorry.
So they're going back to her car, and Jack, they get back to...
I said, hold on.
They get back to her car, and Jack tries using the jack to fix her car. It breaks again, and...
Well, because the welding, she was being so annoying.
Yeah.
He hurried through it because the welding... So the welding wasn't very good.
Right.
She was like, well, did you write down what Jack said?
No. I don't think so.
What did he say, that you were blathering on and on or something like that?
because you were blathering on and on to, I don't remember what the black's Al or something. But anyway, so.
Ray.
Who cares? The blacksmith. She convinces Jack to take her back to the blacksmith.
And every time she's like, oh, could I convince you to do one more thing for me? And Matt Dillon's already like fuming.
Yes. And by this, on their way back, he's finally had enough. He takes the Jack from the council of the van, and he basically just obliterates Uma Thurman's face.
She was going like on and on and on. So at that point, you don't expect somebody to do what he did, but you would expect somebody to like screech to a halt and tell her, get your ass out of my car.
Yeah.
And which is what she should have, what he should have done, but.
Should have never picked her up.
Yeah. This is where you're like, kind of like torn, because you're like, she is so annoying.
Do I care that she got cremated?
It was a very graphic scene also, but.
Oh yeah. He takes the Jack and smashes her face, and there's a giant dent in her forehead.
Yeah.
And half of her face is caved in.
Yeah. It was pretty intense.
It's a good one. So then we cut. Jack explains to Verge, who is this voiceover character, about architecture and engineering and, you know, the benefits of both and how they all work together and everything. Then we cut back to Jack, and he has pushed Uma Thurman's car across a small bridge and into the woods. It turns out, luckily for him, that the other side of the bridge is actually another state. So technically, the cops in his state can't see, in quotes, over the state line, so which would hinder their investigation into the murder.
Yeah, there would be like a jurisdiction conflict of interest.
You know, one thing I'm surprised about is that Jack,
But there is the long arm statute.
I don't know what that is.
That, I'm not 100% sure, but from what I know about it, it gives one state's police force.
Like if the murder happened in one state, but then the body was found in another. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I could be wrong.
At some point prior to all this going on, Jack had bought a freezer, like a freezer warehouse. And he's explaining that in buying the freezer, that he also bought all the frozen pizzas that were in it. And, you know, he's talking about the shitty pizza. But anyway, so he takes Uma Thurman's body back to this freezer and stashes her away. Then we cut to another title card, Second Incident. At this point, he is posing as a police officer. He goes up to a woman's house. Nancy has the long arm statute.
A long arm statute is a statute that allows for a court to obtain personal jurisdiction over an out-of-state defendant on the basis of certain acts committed by an out-of-state defendant, provided that the defendant has a sufficient connection with the state. So if it's a Michigan person killing somebody in Ohio, technically Michigan State Police could bust him because he's from Michigan. He has a connection to Michigan.
Okay.
I think
I see what you're saying. I think the definition was kind of screwy.
Yeah, you're going to edit out that first part, right?
So now we cut to the second incident. Jack is posing as a police officer. He goes up to a woman's house. He knocks on the door. She comes to answer. And he's talking to her about how he's doing an investigation.
It's so cringy.
He's doing an investigation because there's been break-ins in the area. And
he's not a very good liar at all.
Which also comes into play a little bit later. She asked to see a badge. He says, "Well, I don't have a badge. My badge is at the blacksmith's or the silversmith."
He's feeding her a line of bullshit.
Exactly.
So, and she's not buying it.
She's not buying it.
She says, "I want to."
And
I'm not going to let you in if I don't see the badge. And that then he changes his story.
He does change his story. And he's like, he starts clapping. He's applauding. He says, "That is exactly what we want to hear people say.
Good on you.
That is exactly what we want to hear people say. Very good. But you know, bravo." And he says, "I'm actually an insurance agent." And he's like looking behind her in her house, and there's a picture of her dead husband. And he says, "Well, He says, I can make one phone call and I can get you, you know, more pension from your dead husband. And like, they can double your pension. And then she lets him in. She's like, oh, well,
okay. Yeah, if you, can double my pension, that like outweighed her, her, you know,
more money is
common
good.
Sense of not letting him in.
So she lets him in. They have a little chit chat and she goes to make tea. As she goes off to make tea, he comes up behind her and he starts strangling her. And she's like, they're falling and fighting over each other. And she ends up like, he thinks she is dead. And as she's laying there, she like wakes up real quick and she's like,
choking, like gasping.
And he kind of feels bad for her. Like, he's like, okay, here, like, hang on. He's got this thermos of tea with him.
This is another kind of strange thing. Because, like, first of all, you're thinking that first murder, it could have been, like...
just out of frustration.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and you're kind of like, well, I can kind of see, you know, what would have driven him to that.
Yeah.
And then with this one, you're like, no, he's a bad guy. But then he has remorse, so you're like... right. Maybe he's not a bad guy. Yeah. You know, maybe this is just coincidental.
It just kind of happened.
Yeah, he's just having a really bad day.
She wakes up and like Nancy just said, he feels bad for this woman because she's gasping for air. Yeah. So he offers her some tea and a donut and he crumbles up the donut and puts it in the tea and he's trying to get her to drink. And then, like...
she's, like, choking on the floor, and he's pouring donut water into her mouth.
And she, like, he tries strangling her again, and she doesn't die. And then she wakes back up again, and he's like, fuck, you know, fucking just die already.
He's so awkward, like, he doesn't have any clue what he's doing.
He doesn't know.
Which makes you kind of think, is this... because I think they allude to in the rest of the movie that he's done this before, but
right
in this, the cases that we see, he's just like a bumbling fool, you know,
yeah,
where he doesn't know what he's doing.
Like it's just kind of happening and he doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So he ends up like searching for her heart and he sticks her with a blade.
Well, he's very intelligent. He's an engineer.
He is smart.
And he felt around on her sternum.
Yeah, to find the right spot
where
her heart was at. So yeah, he ends up pounding a knife into her.
He did know that if he did that, she would quickly die and be out of her misery. And then you're kind of wondering, oh well, he didn't want her to suffer. Yeah, so maybe there's a little bit of like empathy in him.
I don't know what. Yeah, you never really find out what his motivation.
No, and it's Matt Dillon, which is perfect casting because. He was the victim and to die for.
Right.
And people automatically think of him. I mean, he was in The Outsider.
Well, he's always played the pretty boy.
Yeah. Nobody would ever think of him as a serial killer. Even on There's Something About Mary. I mean, he was a jerk.
Those goofy bastards.
But he was like laughable. It was like humorous.
Yeah.
So you don't see him in a role like this.
Not usually.
You just can't picture him being a bad guy.
Yeah, I can't think of any other movies that he's been in where he played the bad guy.
Oh, and for my sister Joni, I remember your scrapbook that you had, and you had a picture of, it was a newspaper clipping of The Outsiders, and you put next to every one of the picture, like, hunk, 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 dog, hunk, 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 dog. And Emilio Estevez was a dog, but see, Thomas Howell was a hunk, Patrick Swayze was a hunk, Matt Dillon was a hunk. Ralph Macchio was a hunk.
Ralph Macchio?
Wasn't
he like 14?
I think the only dog was Emilio Estevez.
Joni, reach out to us and let us know.
It was a red scrapbook.
Yeah.
I remember it, Joni. I read everything in it. Saw those chopsticks.
All right. So. So after he kills this woman, wraps her up in a shower curtain, takes her out and put her in the van. And then as he's sitting there.
No, it was Babe. Sorry.
Oh, Babe.
It wasn't Hunk.
It was. Okay.
Yeah. I guess back then a high guy was called a Babe.
Okay. So yeah, Joni, let us know how accurate is Nancy's recollection. but so he puts this woman in the back of his van. And as he's sitting there, he starts thinking like, wait a second. Did I leave blood on the floor? So he goes back in and he starts wiping up all this blood on the floor. And then he goes back out to the van, and he's sitting there, and he's thinking, shit, like, was there any other blood? Like,
he has OCD.
He does have OCD. So he goes back into this woman's house, and he lifts up a picture frame, and he's wiping under the picture. And then he lifts up a lamp, and he's wiping blood under the lamp, thinking that there's blood there. And then he goes back out to the van, and he sits there, and he's thinking again. He's like, fuck, is there blood under, like, the footstool? So he goes back in, and he's wiping blood up, or what he thinks is blood.
In his paranoia, he's thinking that he could have missed multiple places to, like, sterilize before he left. And so as he's leaving the scene, he's like, he's obsessing over, like, maybe there's one small blood drop under this chair leg,
which could never get there because the chair leg was there.
So, but you're seeing how his OCD is affecting him. Like, he just cannot let something go without, like, rectifying it.
Right. So after he's finally satisfied with the cleaning, he goes back out to the van, and he's sitting there, and then he hears sirens coming, and he's sitting there, and he's like, oh shit, they got me. And so he takes the body, he hides it in some bushes. The cop pulls up, and he says, you know, get out of the van. So Matt Dillon gets out of the van, or Jack gets out of the van, checks the back, and there's, like, nothing there.
Yeah. And so, he's all being, like, Mr. Upright Citizen.
He's offering. He's like, well, I was here. I was trying to collect some magazines from so-and-so's wife. And, you know, she went inside, and then it's been, like, 2 hours, and I haven't heard from her. So and she's just gone missing.
Setting up his alibi because he was seen, or Glenn saw her.
Hey, Glenn.
Him and her talking on the porch.
Right.
And so he's like, he's probably thinking back at what Uma Thurman at that point said.
Oh, yeah, about being seen together.
That would be a really big mistake for a serial killer because, you know, if somebody sees you two together, they're going to remember that. And
right.
I think he, obsesses about it.
So he follows the cop into this house, and he's like, you should really search everything, like, super, super thoroughly, like, with a magnifying glass. And the cop eventually tells him to get, like, just fucking split, leave, you know, get out of the house. You're hindering an investigation.
Yeah, you're basically being a nuisance, so let us do our work.
Jack ties a rope to the back of his van, which is tied to the dead body in the shower curtain. And he tears off down the road. And this is so funny. As he's driving down the road, there's this, like, smear of blood, a trail of blood going from the body all the way back to the freezer. And
well, you're thinking right away, if there's blood coming out, obviously it's a dead body, it's going to bleed. But it's a body, and the only protection between the body and the ground
is a plastic shower curtain.
And that can only, I mean,
that'll get you maybe a block down the road before it wears off.
And he's, you know, I mean, he can see in his rearview mirror that he's leaving this, like, blood smear behind him.
He finally gets to the freezer. And just as he gets there, he's, like, thinking in his mind, like, oh shit, they're going to, you know, they're just going to follow the trail and find
me. Yeah.
And just as he says that, the skies open up and it starts pouring rain, and they show all the blood, like, washing down the drains and everything. So he brings the body into the freezer, and he unwraps it, and literally, like, the whole basically face of the body has been completely, like, ground down or, like, shaved down. Well, so it's basically just half a skull.
Yeah, and that's pretty surprising because you would think if he was, like, having a body tied up, trailing behind him, that the body would be facing upward.
I think it was probably just, like, spinning and rolling as he was driving and making turns and stuff.
I don't think so.
I think it would. If you're holding something behind you, it would just, like, it would roll and flop as you're making turns and wiggling and stuff. So he puts this body away. In the next scene, Jack is standing in front of a mirror, and he's got, like, these pictures of faces cut out, and all these faces have different emotions on them. And he is trying to mimic the look of the faces based on the emotion that's on the picture. So he's, like, going through and he's doing surprise, and he's got this goofy ass, like, weird, like, I don't even like, I don't even know how you explain it. Like, he is.
It's like crib notes so that he knows how to respond in any given situation with his facial expression.
But even more than that, it's like he's playing. How do you explain this? He's playing somebody who supposedly has no emotion, trying to fake emotion. And the way he's
doing it. Are you talking about Matt Dillon or are you talking about the character?
The character. The character has no emotion.
Right.
So he's trying to mimic these emotions without having emotion. So it's like playing two, like, so Matt Dillon as an actor is trying to play two emotions at once. Right.
So he's looking at, he made like a crib sheet of facial expressions.
Yeah.
And if something were to happen.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that Jack as the character is trying to.
But you argued that with me when I said it the first time.
No. No, I didn't. Jack as the character is trying to, like you said, create these emotions.
It's going to be another one of those things. You're going to have to like go back and you're going to have to listen to it because you completely contradicted me. And now you're saying, no, I was right because you were right.
I understand your crib sheet. What I'm saying is that watching him as a character or as an actor try and create an emotionless emotion is interesting to watch.
It is interesting to watch, but he's trying to create it like a cheat sheet so he can be like normal.
Yes, Jack is a character.
Yeah.
I'm like
Dexter.
Exactly.
Yes. Dexter didn't know how to act like a regular person would act in any kind of given situation.
Right, so he's trying to create like an emotionless emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Sorry, yeah, I agree with you. I was just going one step like back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, where are we at? Each of these scenes breaks down into incidents, they're called. I don't think we've made it to incident three. Where is that? That's the kids. Okay.
Before another main scene comes, he has these big note cards, like you said, and it kind of gives you words that kind of...
Did you like that part? Like where he's standing in the alley flipping the cards?
I thought it was a good way to let the audience know what to expect from him.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, I wouldn't say innovative because I feel like it's been done, something similar like that has been done in other movies.
Well, it probably has. Probably not in a horror movie.
Well, on To Die For, they would have like the interview of the kids.
Yeah.
And they would say what happened during the interview, and then you'd go back to the scene when it actually happened.
Okay, right. But, they didn't use cards, though.
No, they didn't use cards.
Yeah. So, but I mean, did you like the overall, just like a preview of what's going to happen with the cards?
I didn't like the handwriting, but yeah.
Well, it was big, block letters.
But it was like embellished handwriting, like fancy for like no reason.
Because he's an engineer.
Yeah, but he didn't even have like proper scale to the letters and...
The kerning wasn't right.
You would think him being an engineer, he would want it to look like... Because I'm very meticulous when it comes to my handwriting.
Nancy's the only person I know that writes in cursive still. I can't read it. So the next scene, he's doing another voiceover and he says he's figured out how long to strangle somebody to actually make sure that they are dead. So in the next scene, he is, and I say so a lot, in the next scene, he is strangling a woman. He does end up killing her by strangulation, and he takes her again to his freezer. He props her up, and he just leaves her there. And as he's driving away from the freezer, he takes some pictures of her. He poses her, takes some pictures of her. And as he's driving back to his freezer, he passes a woman on the road, and he's like, there's this inner struggle. He's thinking.
And you're kind of getting now at this point where you know what, because serial killers, allegedly, they all have trophies.
Yes.
And his trophy is taking their body back to his freezer.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of serial killers do. Yeah, they do. Or they take pictures.
Yeah, usually, picture or something that the person that they killed owned.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's very true. So he passes this woman on the road. I said so again. So he passes this woman on the road, and he's like, there's an inner struggle. He's thinking like, oh man, I could have.
Yeah, I can just keep driving and nothing's going to happen. I can just keep driving.
I could have. I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So then he whips a Yui and he ends up running this woman over, and he's like, all right, you know,
he didn't know why he even did it, kind of like.
I don't think he did. I think it was just an impulse.
I think at that point, he realized that it's something that it was out of his control. And I think as an engineer, that was probably pretty tough for him.
Well, right after he hits this woman is where we get the lamp speech, which I'll get into in just a minute. So he runs over this woman and he takes her back to the apartment of the last woman that he killed. And then he takes the frozen woman back to the apartment of the woman that he just killed, who was frozen, took her back to her apartment, and he takes pictures with the both of them. And then we get this lamp speech. There's a voiceover, and we'll get to who Verge is here in just a minute, or in a little bit. But so what Jack is telling Verge in his inner monologue is this post, or is this speech about lampposts.
Just take a deep breath and use your words.
Yeah. The way Jack is explaining it is that when he's walking down a sidewalk.
Oh, this was really good. It was really like.
You like that explanation?
Yeah, conceptual. It was like, if you don't, because I have a hard time, like, if somebody's explaining something to me, just like by telling me, right. I have a really hard time following it. So, but this was like very. And another reason why I thought it would have gotten a higher rating on IMDb.
Well, now instead of paraphrasing it, I'm going to look up the speech here and read it verbatim.
The visuals that they give you kind of like, it puts it, I don't know. I was really impressed with it. I thought it was a very.
Yeah. This is one of those things that you kind of have to watch.
Yeah. It was a very like intelligent way to explain something so complicated.
Okay. So, okay.
Let's just cut this out and you can do a soundbite right from the movie.
That would be a very good idea. Yes. Insert now.
Imagine a man walking down a street underneath the street lamps. Right under a light, his shadow is the densest but also the tiniest. Then when he starts to move, his shadow grows in front of him. The shadow becomes bigger and bigger while it thins out. And the shadow behind him from the next lamppost emerges and becomes shorter and shorter until it reaches its ultimate density as the man stands directly underneath the light. Let's say that the man standing underneath the first lamppost is me when I've just committed a murder. I feel strong and content. I start to walk and the shadow in front of me grows bigger, like my pleasure. But at the same time, pain is on its way. Represented by the shadow behind me from the next lamppost. And at the midpoint between the lampposts, the pain is so great, it outweighs my pleasure. And with every step forward, pleasure dissolves and pain intensifies behind me. Finally, the pain is so unbearably intense that I have to act. So when I reach the point with the next lamp and zenith, I will kill again.
I know you want to be someone special, Jack. But let's face it, this illustration can be used for any addict's tale of woe. The alcoholic empties the bottle at the zenith, etc., etc. But what about the family?
So, yes, he gives this lamp speech. And then we cut to the third incident. Jack is now, I guess, dating a mother who has two sons.
She's foreign.
What is she?
She had like an accent.
I didn't catch it.
Oh, this was something that I wanted to ask Eamon and little Ben.
Mm-hmm.
The little boy, because I could tell that she was foreign by her accent.
Yeah.
The little boy had, it wasn't summertime. It looked like they were wearing coats.
Yeah, it so looked it like cold. It was fall.
And the little boy had shorts on and, you know, socks and shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that royalty. When a boy is young, royalty like has to, like, for etiquette reasons, I guess, wear shorts and not pants.
Okay.
She's not royalty. So I guess I wanted to ask little Ben and Eamon if this is something that all English people do. with their little boys, or if this is something that you only see with, like, you know, Prince William.
The upper crust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, watching films on the toilet. Little Ben, Eamon, answer. Thank you.
The little boy was so cute.
Grumpy?
Yeah.
Georgie?
They both were cute, but little grumpy kid. And the little grumpy kid was kind of a little shit, but...
We'll get to that part in a minute.
He just didn't want to go.
Well, he didn't. He didn't. And that's why he was nicknamed Grumpy.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack called him Grumpy. We don't know what his real name was.
He's not so grumpy towards the end.
Yeah. Well, you can get into that, but...
So Jack takes this mother and her two sons to the... I said it again. Jack takes this mother and her two sons to a... like shooting range out in the woods.
It was a hunting blind, an elevated hunting blind.
Yeah. And he's explaining to them about, you know, the rules of hunting and how you should kill like the youngest first and then the middle and then the mother. So that way the youngest, because if you kill the mother, the two fawns will die. We're talking about deer. He's talking about deer. If you kill the mother, the two fawns die. If you kill the middle, then the mother will run away and the youngest fawn will die. So you do them in reverse order, youngest, middle, and then mother. He goes up into the blind, has the one kid shoot the deer, like the target.
And it's really sad because the kids, of course, when you see a hunting blind and you got a big ladder going up to it.
Yeah.
What's a little boy going to want to do?
Oh, I want to go up there.
Yeah, they're going to want to climb up there, but yeah. they didn't. So you're kind of wondering how come they're not going up there with them.
Well, the one kid does go up there.
Did he?
Grumpy didn't. George did.
I don't remember him going up there.
Yeah. Yeah. George does go up with them because he shoots the target with Jack. And then they come back down and because then he's explaining.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, they do come back down.
So the scene cuts. In the next scene, you see the mother and the two sons like cowering behind this like, I don't know, lump of dirt and rocks and everything. And the first boy runs out and it's the middle child, George. And Jack is like, oh fuck, I can't do this. Jack is standing up in this blind, like Nancy said, an elevated blind. And the middle son runs out.
Oh, one thing we should interject is that Jack insisted that all four of them wear red baseball caps.
Yes.
Because it's safe.
Oh, right.
When you're hunting.
Oh, That infuriated me. Yeah. Yes. To Nancy's point, he tells them that they're all wearing red caps for visibility. Do not under any circumstances take these off so you can be yeah. seen at all times. Then we go to the point where Jack.
That's another point where you're like, he's like normal. He's going to like be a normal person to these people because he's trying to like prevent them from getting hurt.
You got to stop interrupting me.
That is what I do. Yeah. I'm interrupting with good points, though. You're just rambling on and on. I'm trying to, like, interject my thoughts, and you're just, like going, like, nonstop. I got to get in there somewhere.
Okay, fine. All right. The mom and the two sons are cowering in fear out in the shooting range. And the middle son, or not the middle son, the older of the two boys runs out. Jack pulls off. He doesn't shoot at him. You know Jack is hunting them because he's up in the blind and they're, you know, again, down in fear. And the son runs across. Jack doesn't shoot. Then the mother picks up Grumpy and they run across. He doesn't shoot again. They're hiding in another spot. Jack ends up running, or not Jack, fuck. Grumpy ends up running out first. And Jack takes a shot, hits the kid in the leg, and just basically obliterates his leg. The boy dies because he bleeds out, I'm assuming. The older boy pokes his head up from behind this mound of dirt, and Jack wastes his head. Now, you don't see this. So, fortunately, you don't actually see him obliterate the kid's head with a fucking hunting bullet. Well,
that's the point at which you think that there's going to be at least a little bit of tastefulness in this movie.
So... They're,
for which you are...
You don't really get it.
Me?
No, them.
Oh.
I mean, us as viewers don't really get tastefulness out of the movie.
No, but you think that, you know, if they refrained from withholding, like, a certain, like, really gory scenes that they could put in there, and you kind of think, well, at least they're trying to be tasteful, and, you know, these are kids, and...
I think...
But that changes completely... towards the end.
I think in the director's cut, they actually do show the kid getting hit.
I can't watch. So that's the one thing I can do.
We didn't watch the director's cut. But then you cut to a scene where the two boys and the mom are sitting at a picnic with Jack. And Jack is telling the mom that when he was younger, and I completely missed the part about the scythes and the duck foot. There's a point where Jack is telling Verge, again in a voiceover, about the men with the scythes. And he's hiding in these reeds. And he's sitting on this dock. This is back earlier in the movie. I don't know how I missed it.
I saw that scene and I got it.
Yeah.
So they'd have to stomp the wheat down after the scythes cut it down. And it was very methodical.
Yeah. Well, Jack was telling Verge about how he liked to play hide and seek. But he kind of wanted to be, and I think this was right after the first or the second woman whose face was sheared off. So he's telling Verge about how he wants to be, like he liked to play hide and seek when he was a kid, but he would always hide in the reeds. Mm-hmm. And because he went into the reeds had to be like, he would walk on them and they would be stomped down. So mm-hmm. even if he was hiding, he could still very easily be found because of the path through the reeds. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to another scene where Jack is sitting on a dock and he catches a duckling in his net. And he's sitting there and he pulls out this pair of like wire snips or tin snips or something. And he just fucking like...
like wire snips.
Cuts the fucking the duckling's leg off and then just drops it back into the fucking water.
And this is another point like on Dexter where you're starting to realize, okay, he's been a serial killer in his head
since for a long time.
Yeah. You don't just become a serial killer. There's like something within you.
Something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little chemical imbalance. so.
And the snip noise that it makes.
Oh yeah.
It's gross. And you're just kind of looking, you're thinking that's it was just a baby. So, it was gross.
They're sitting at this picnic. Grumpy's dead and George's dead. He tells the mom, what's your favorite number? The mom says 12. He says, okay, all right, 12 is a good number. That's a fabulous number. And then Jack starts counting out loud. 1, 2, 3. And this is the point where the mother realizes like, oh, fuck. You know, now he's hunting me, mm-hmm. and 12 was the number he was going to give me to get away.
Yeah.
So she takes off, and he ends up shooting her and killing her. Jack takes the mom, Georgie, and Grumpy back to the freezer.
Wait, he did put them, he lined them all up in the field.
Yeah, where he's talking about the culling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He took all of the crows or whatever it was. Yeah,
dead crows or ravens.
Yeah. You'd have to watch that scene, but he was very methodical about how he displayed it for himself.
Right.
To make it look like very symmetric.
Very symmetrical, very ceremonial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just about killing them and taking them back to their freezer. This is like an art form.
Well, like you said, with the pictures and the collecting and the stuff like that. So it's like he wants to be, or he wants to recognize what he's doing as an accomplishment, not just an act.
Yeah.
He takes all the bodies, the three bodies, back to the freezer, and he's complaining again in this voiceover about how Grumpy was grumpy and he wanted to make Grumpy happy. So he starts talking about taxidermy and he takes this wire. he takes this wire.
It's so sick.
He's bending it into shape and into form.
And you're thinking as you're watching this, like, no, no, this isn't going to happen.
What he actually does is take the wire and he pushes it into Grumpy's mouth to make this weird, morbid, like freaky ass looking smile. And he props Grumpy's arm up like he's waving. And at this point, Jack is happy because Grumpy's happy. So
yeah, so he freezes Grumpy that way.
Right. Yeah, Grumpy's frozen. Everybody's frozen at this point.
Yeah, but he made sure that Grumpy was frozen. He was thawed out to do this.
Thawed him out enough, yeah.
Yeah. And then he refroze him to his liking. It was sick. I mean, that scene was just like, that's just in bad taste.
It did look like the kid from Terrified sitting at the table.
Yeah, kind of.
You know,
yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
was.
Join host Dave Houghton and Sarah Ray Talley as they examine the less glamorous side of sports with their podcast, In a Pickle. Follow IAP Radio on social media by going to iapradio.com. In a Pickle is now part of the Den Network. For more information, go to iapradio.com.
Now we cut to the fourth, and it's the fourth incident. Elvis's granddaughter, and Nancy pointed this out, that it is Lisa Marie and some dude's daughter. So Elvis's granddaughter, Simple.
Riley Keough.
Yep. Jack calls her Simple. That's her nickname for her.
Wait, wasn't her, was her name, what was her
it
name?
Her real name was Jacqueline. He called her Simple.
Simple. And she didn't like it.
She did not like it, not one bit. She is dating Jack, and he's talking about her boobs, and he's talking about how dumb she is, and he's talking about this, and he's talking about that.
She had perfect tits, though.
And as he's talking, she gets more and more irritated with Jack.
Yeah, she's kind of like eating snacks, and they're like watching TV, and the more he's talking, she's like...
I don't have to listen to this.
Yeah, yeah.
So, she ends up running downstairs, and she runs into a cop, and she's like, my friend is drinking, and he's talking about how he's killed 60 people and bleh, whatever else. And the cop says, he says, listen, ma'am, have you been drinking? She says, well, yeah. He says, I can't tell you to stop drinking, but I would strongly suggest that you get off the streets and go back up to your apartment and, like, you know, sober up. And Jack follows her down. They both end up going back up, and Jack pretends like he's passed out on
this
the couch.
This is kind of like the story of Jeffrey Dahmer. When one of his victims got out and tried telling the police, this guy is like crazy.
I believe two of them escaped. The first one sent him back with Jeffrey.
Yeah.
The second one, I think, that escaped actually did get the cops to believe him. So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I know because I've listened to podcasts about him. The first boy was a Filipino, and I think he was underage. And yeah, Jeffrey came down and he says, no, this is, my boyfriend, we've had too much to drink, whatever. So they sent the kid.
I'll take care of him. I'll make sure that he's fine. Yeah. And Jack had the same creepy ass Jeffrey Dahmer glasses.
He did actually. Yeah. The big aviator glasses. So, yeah, very good call-up for that one. So they go back up to the apartment, and then Jack ends up tying Jacqueline up, and he pulls out her boobs again, and he says, he starts drawing, like, hash marks on her boobs, all around her boobs. And then as she's tied up, he says, I'm going to pick three knives. So he picks the three knives, and he says, you get to choose which one I'm going to use. She doesn't know what's coming at this point. I think she has an idea, but... it's never really presented to the viewer. So he says, okay, how about this knife? And she's no, how about this knife? No, I don't want that one. And then he gets to the third knife and she's like, okay, whatever. And then the scene cuts as he's cutting her boobs off. You don't actually see her cutting her boobs off. Then he takes one of her boobs and he goes back downstairs to where the cop was. And he slaps her titty on the, slaps her titty on the windshield and puts the windshield wiper over it, and then he just walks away.
I think we should mention that throughout this entire saga, so Jack is an engineer, but he always wanted to be an architect.
Correct.
And he is designing his own house on his own land.
Yes.
And he builds a house first out of brick, and that wasn't good enough.
Wasn't good enough, so he has it bulldozed.
Yeah, he has it completely torn down. Mm-hmm. Then the next house he builds... He has it made...
I think it was out of wood.
Yeah, from wood studs.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the good house. And
Doesn't like that one.
Right. So progressively throughout the movie, you're seeing him try to build his house, but it's not perfect enough.
Right.
So he completely trashes it and starts over again.
Yes.
And I think that's supposed to be a metaphor for his kills.
You think so?
I think so.
How he's getting better and practicing and making things the right way.
Yeah, and he has OCD, so he has to make sure it's perfect.
Damn, lady. That's a good pickup. I never even put that together. I'll give you that one. We get some artsy-fartsy talk about, piano playing and more, paintings and sculptures and blah, 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 whatever. Jack now goes to buy some Full Metal Jacket ammo from Al, and he gets the ammo. He goes back to the freezer. He pulls a guy who obviously was in the van out of the van, and he ties him up along with nine other gentlemen to this copper bar. The last guy that he pulls out or pulled out of the van tells Jack that, hey, you know, I'm a military man. That is not, in fact, a Full Metal Jacket cartridge. Jack gets all pissed off and he drives off again back to Al's. Paying for these bullets, he pulls out this wallet, which turns
it was just not necessary, but totally something that, like a Jeffrey Dahmer moment.
It turns out that his wallet.
Or an Ed Gein moment.
I would say Ed Gein.
Yeah.
It turns out that his wallet is actually the severed titty of Simple that he had dried and somehow formed into a wallet with a snap and everything. So as he's paying, he's pulling money out of this titty and he's putting it on the counter and paying for the bullets.
Yeah, well, you can see like the threading and it's all done like amateur.
And her nipple was right on top.
Yeah.
So he's paying with boob money. And he goes back to Al's after he discovers that the cartridge that he bought was not actually a Full Metal Jacket cartridge. And Al's acting all fishy. He's like, you know, I got to see a receipt. I got to have ID.
Why would you want just one bullet?
Well, yeah. And he asked him that. He says, why do you want just one bullet? And he says, Jack says, you know, it's none of your fucking business why I want just one bullet. Like, you know, I'm paying for it. Yeah. What do you fucking
all
care?
I want is just one Full Metal Jacket.
Right. So Al doesn't sell him the money. Jack drives off and he goes to a gentleman.
Did you say Al doesn't sell him the money?
Or Al doesn't sell him the ammo. I was looking at the, Al doesn't sell him the ammo. Jack drives off and he goes to another gentleman he buys ammo from, SP. SP's there. He's in this little trailer off in the woods. And he's telling Jack about how, like, listen, the cops are on to you. You're not going to get away with this. And SP ends up calling the cops. Now, Nancy had a real hard time with this part. The whole time they're talking, SP has a gun on Jack. I'll let you take it away.
You just go ahead. I'll interject when.
Okay.
When I find it necessary.
So SP calls the cops. He says, listen, I got Jack here. You know, he's confessed to me what he's done. You guys can come and pick him up. And he's holding a gun on Jack. He's got a gun trained on Jack this whole time.
And this guy is like a hunter. He's very skilled in knowing how to use. I mean, he sells
ammo. He sells guns.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so he's got Jack, I guess, in his sight.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of.
I was just looking at them.
Oh, he's just kind of thinking that, well, this guy, okay, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's still got his sight set on Jack.
Right.
All right. You can go from there.
So what ends up happening is they end up chit-chatting some more, and SP ends up turning his head just long enough for Jack to pull out his boot knife. And SP turns around again. Jack sticks the knife up into his into his neck. Now, the problem that Nancy had was, okay, listen, SP knew that Jack was guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly guilty.
And he was crazy.
And well, right. the cops finally show up, and Jack is wearing the robe that SP had on. The cop thinks that Jack is SP and that the dead body on the floor is Jack. He's like, all right, thank you. You know, you got him. Good job. Jack turns around, shoots the cop three or four times, and then drives off in the cop car. The whole time, the siren's blaring. Lights are on, siren's blaring. And he goes back to the freezer.
So, my beef was, why would somebody that had him in his sight, he knew he was guilty, why wouldn't he have at least shot out? Maybe, like, one shot?
Kneecapped him.
Immobilize him, at least.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't do that.
We talked about that last night when we were watching this. Why you just, you know, put a bullet in his kneecap, put a bullet in his other kneecap.
Yeah.
He ain't running anywhere. He ain't going anywhere. It's not going to kill him if you kneecap him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the uppity son of a bitch, Django, did that to Steven.
Yeah. I guess maybe he didn't want to get, like, prosecuted for it.
I don't know. I did. It's one of those things, and it's another one of those movie tropes, horror movie tropes. You know you've got the bad guy, but you give the bad guy just enough time to mm-hmm. fucking get one up on you. And that's exactly what happened in this situation.
Right.
So, Jack goes
you
back.
You don't to, ever say, I'll be right back.
Jack goes back to the freezer. He finally has his real full metal jacket. And he's trying to shoot the 10 guys in the head at the same time. Now, he's talking. He was a little bit earlier. He was talking to Verge about how the Germans during World War II, because they were running low on ammo, if they had to execute people, they would line them up and shoot them all in the head at the same time. That way they saved on it. You know, they can kill three or four guys with one bullet instead of like one bullet per guy. And that's the reason he wanted the full metal jacket ammunition for his hunting rifle. This whole time in the freezer, there has been a room that Jack couldn't get into. After the guy tells him that, yes, this is in fact a full metal jacket, the cops start banging on the door. They found Jack in the freezer. They find Jack. They start cutting through the freezer door with a welding torch or whatever, or a plasma cutter, whatever it is. And Jack finally gets the door open. And then this Verge, who has been only a voiceover this whole time, is sitting in the corner of this freezer room that Jack had never been able to get into. And he's like, oh, hey, you know, Jack, by the way, you know, like this house that you've been trying to build.
Like a Quonset hut. Are you talking about the bodies?
Well, Verge is in the room. And he starts explaining, like, Jack, you've been building this house this whole time.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what you were talking about. He says, you haven't been able to perfect the house that you wanted to build this whole time, but you have the materials right here. Mm-hmm. So Jack and Verge build this, like you said, a little hut in this freezer room out of the dead bodies. And they're
all frozen and like they do on, Naked and Afraid.
It's like a lean-to.
Not like a lean-to. When they're out on the Sahara, Boma.
Oh, a Boma. Yeah.
Where they just put everything, anything that they can get to
kind of haphazard.
And that's kind of
how one it thing, was. And this irritated me. I didn't see Grumpy in the house, but there was one body right at the peak of the door that would have been the perfect place for him to put Grumpy at. Like waving as you come in.
That would be pretty sick.
It would have been, but it would have been perfect for the movie.
I guess.
So anyway.
Not where my head was at, but go ahead.
Jack builds this house, and just as the cops come in, they start firing through this hole in the door, and Jack jumps down this hole. And now this is where shit gets really goofy and weird. So just as Jack walks down the hole, I don't know what happened. Just as Jack walks or jumps down this hole, another title card comes up and it says Epilogue, Catabasis. And what catabasis is the descent or the journey into the underworld. This is where you kind of have to know what the whole crux of the movie is about. Now, because catabasis is a journey or a descent into the underworld, you have to know about Dante's Inferno and the seven rings of hell or the nine rings of hell and what their meanings are and all this other stuff. You also have to know about who Verge is. Verge is, in the writings of Dante's Inferno, is Publius Virgilius Mero, or Virgil. And he is the poet that actually takes Dante through hell in Dante's Inferno. Now, as they're walking through these weird locations,
it's like they're in a cave, remember? It's like a cave like
in a cave.
The Goonies.
Did you bring that up over to watch it? Yeah. So, yeah, they're walking through this cave. There's this water rushing in. And this whole time, you hear this like buzzing or humming sound. And Jack says, what is that sound? And Verge says, well, that is the sound of millions and millions of voices all screaming out in pain at once. And it makes this like humming or buzzing sound. And Jack's like, yeah, okay, weird, you know. And Jack's complaining about how he doesn't feel right. And he's kind of like got a weird taste in his mouth. And
good.
And this whole time, there's like this visual trippiness. There's one scene where they're like falling in these like, I don't know, like bubbles or something. And they're like falling to the bottom of the sea. And then there's another scene where they're like trapped under ice, and another scene where they're standing in a boat and people are like, there's water splashing, but there's like naked people propping the boat up and all sorts of goofiness. Now, I imagine all this has to do with the actual writing of Dante's Inferno, which I have never read and really don't have an interest in. Well, maybe a little bit, but all this is going on. So they come to one part. And they're in this giant cavern, or what would you call it, where the broken bridge was? Like just a giant...
Yeah, it would
like
be a big cavern.
A cavern. So they're standing there, and there's this raging fire river underneath them, and a broken bridge in front of them. And Jack says, well, like, what's on the other side of this bridge? And Verge says, well, that leads you up and out of hell into heaven. And Jack says, well, has anyone ever, like, gotten across the bridge? And Verge says, well, many have tried, but none have succeeded. And Jack says, well, like, how about if I climb around the outside and, you know, try and get around that way? And says, you know, Verge is like, okay, fuck it, go ahead, you know, whatever.
Well, you're supposed to, like, wonder how many times has somebody in this situation, which, if it's Dante's Inferno.
Right.
I mean, you know, that you can't, like, turn back from that.
I don't think so.
So if you know that, then you know that Jack's not going to be the one person that beats it.
I don't think he would have a shot.
No.
So Jack starts trying to climb around the edge of this giant cavern, and he ultimately ends up falling into the river of fire, the giant pit of fire, and he dies. And then that's the end of the movie. Now, okay, so...
It's a lot to take in.
It is a lot to take in. Okay.
It's a horror movie, but it's also a statement and a look at literature.
Yes. Well, and being that it was written by Lars von Trier, who is also a very wackadilly director.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was written by him, but it was directed by him. And he did Antichrist and Melancholia and the Nymphomaniac series. So very just wacky. Mm-hmm. Obviously a lot of weird visuals, obviously a lot of weird symbolism and stuff like that. Now, the broken bridge that leads to heaven, Jeff, okay, so.
Wouldn't that be like the last, like, when you're going to hell, you're kind of in limbo, mm-hmm. so to speak. The fact that there's a broken bridge, I would think that just going to hell would be better. But there's that one last insult where here's a bridge where you can get out of it, but it's a bridge you can't cross.
I think so. Yeah, I could
so
see that.
So just to stick it to him.
Just to stick it to you a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. So my question for you is, do you think Jack actually died? Like when the cops came in and they were shooting, do you think he got hit and just as he dove into the hole, he died? And then this, like everything that happened after he jumps into the hole is him after death?
I think that he did die.
You think he did die?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I looked this up online, so this is not actually my thoughts, but the broken bridge that leads to heaven, kind of like you just said, Jack tries to climb around, but he dies, so he doesn't actually have a chance to repent.
Mm-hmm.
We are Christians. Biblically, it says that when you die, you go to heaven, you're judged. Okay, so he doesn't have a chance to repent. I don't know. But here's another. But
wouldn't that be something that would be a really good way to stick it to somebody?
Well, yeah.
Because I think everybody thinks that they have that get out of jail free card.
I think so.
I think a lot of criminals think all I got to do is repent and I'm good. So I can do whatever I want. Yeah. You know.
So okay.
And there's twisted people out there that think that.
No, I know. And here's another alternate theory that also again I found online. Nothing was real. No one ever catches him. And he dreamt it all or thought about it all, but he ends up dying in the freezer before he can, like, he buys the freezer. Hang on. Of course they shut up. So that none of this was actually real.
I think that's a stretch.
You think he actually dies? He did everything?
Yeah.
He gets shot, he dies?
Yeah.
And everything?
I think it would be an insult to the viewer to think that it was all a dream.
Okay. All right. I like that one better too myself, that he gets shot. He did everything. He gets shot. He dies. Everything after he dives into the hole is, him actually going through the underworld.
Well, think about it. We sat through this, was it 2 hours and... It was
like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. We're watching this movie to have him just have it just be a dream, that would be 2.5 hours wasted. We want to see the bad guy get caught. We want to see the bad guy go down.
I do think they do that too often in movies. Like, oh, it was all a simulation, or oh, it was all a hallucination.
Yeah. Well, they do that when they think there's going to be a sequel.
Well, I would have felt insulted if it turns out it was a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. We are done with this one. Let's cut right to the chase. What do you put on the gore score? What do you put this on the gore score?
Oh, gosh. The duck foot.
Yeah.
That kind of put me at an 8 right then and there.
Okay.
But you add in the face of the woman who was towed behind the van.
Yeah.
Definitely a 10.
Grumpy.
Yeah. Grumpy, yeah. Yeah. If I could do a 10 plus, then a 10 plus.
So, okay. And because this one is some of it's goofy. I mean, the woman getting her face like ground off and grumpy and his goofy ass smile. It's kind of goofy, but at the same time, it's also very realistic.
Okay.
So, I'm agreeing with you. But yeah, I'm saying.
Okay.
It's goofy, but it's realistic. Okay, and then how about your overall?
Overall, and I base this on rewatchability.
Right.
I can see us watching this again maybe 2 or 3 more times. So I would say 7.
7. Okay. All right. Pretty good.
I feel like it's one of those movies that you catch something new every time you watch it.
I think you probably would.
Yeah.
I think you probably would. Yeah. And it's one of those, and I think with this one, maybe not so much visually you would catch it, but like vocally or like, you know, wordplay or mm-hmm. whatever. What am I trying to say? Dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to put this just a hair under Nancy and put it at like a 9. And
on the gore score?
Yeah. On the gore score. Just because, I've seen worse. This was realistic violence. Again, it was kind of goofy in some parts. I mean, I could totally see people doing this, but like the titty coin purse and the like, I know you think the woman's face getting ground off was gory.
Oh, and but, the cutting off of the woman's boob.
Well, they don't actually show that.
But a woman can feel that. I mean, well, she's not feeling it, but I mean, that made me grab my boob and be all like, no, that would suck.
It would. But it's like the nipple being cut off in that Asian movie Grotesque.
But what about when didn't they cut off a guy's penis?
Well, they did.
How did you feel about that?
I think I probably gave that a 10.
Yeah. Exactly.
So okay, I mean that's fair. No, I totally get that. And then I think I will agree. It is a very long watch. I mean, it's 2.5 hours long. But I would put it overall at a 7. It is a good.
Excuse me. Make it a movie night movie where you make popcorn and
yeah. I mean it's entertaining.
You're gonna be there for a while.
But maybe if we knew more about it, like the Dante's Inferno and all that, you know, symbolism and stuff like that, I think it would be slightly more entertaining. But overall I'll put this at a 7 as well. Simply because you have to invest time in it. Obviously, 2.5 hours is a long movie. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. So, yeah, a 9 on the gore score for me, a 7 overall, a 10 on the gore score, and a 7 overall from Nancy. We are Extreme Horror Replay. Excuse me. I am Ben. She is Nancy. Together as the butt cheeks, we are...
an ass.
an ass. And we are Extreme Horror Replay. you can find us on Instagram at XHR_podcast.
You called me a butt cheek.
I called myself a butt cheek, too.
Yeah, but you called me a butt cheek. You don't call your wife a butt cheek.
Better than be called an asshole.
I beg to differ.
You'd rather be called an asshole than a butt cheek?
Any better than being called an asshole?
I would rather be a cheek than a hole.
That's you.
So me personally, I would rather be called a butt cheek than an asshole.
All right, I can be the asshole, you can be the butt cheek.
Fine, fair enough. I'll be both cheeks.
Yeah, why don't you?
All right. So Yeah, we do have a Patreon at patreon.com/XHR podcast. We do have a Tee Public where you can buy some cool swag if you so desire. Our Patreon is $4, $6, and $8 a month. If you so decide, $4 is only 13 cents a day. You get access to uncut episodes, which this is actually kind of a long one. You also get access to giving us a would you rather, you get some cool swag that way, etc., etc. It's got paprika in it. yeah, I think we're done. So we will talk to you all later. Be safe. Stay good to each other. No, stay safe and be good to each other. And to Nancy, I will turn the mic over for her to say,
I am not a butt cheek.
She is an asshole.
But I will say goodbye.
All right, fine. Fair enough. Thank you. We love you all. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good week. Bye.